Let's go back to Romans and chapter 1 and to verses that deal with. No, I'm loving the sun coming. It's in my eyes, but I'm just loving it. It's so good. I love this day when we get the evening back again. It's just great. So, Romans chapter 1, and we've been thinking in our songs this evening about the existence of God and the way the creation declares that, and also about those who don't believe in the existence of God, the atheist. Yeah, I want to think about that in Romans 1 terms, and let's read again verses 18 to 20 in Romans 1. Where Paul says, "The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse." Now, we hear a great deal these days about atheism. And when I use the word atheism, I'm sure you are familiar with it now. Its meaning today is that we're talking about people who believe that there is not a transcendent God, that there is not a God who is not part of the creation, who is over creation, who has made all things. They believe that somehow creation has come about without a creator. And for many people today, it's almost taken us for granted. It's taken us a kind of logical thing to believe, the kind of conclusion that a thinking man or a thinking woman would come to upon consideration of the facts, which it is anything but. And Paul here isn't really dealing with atheism. He's dealing with idolatry. He's dealing with people who, as verse 23 says, exchange the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. But the reasoning that Paul uses here is important when we're thinking about anyone who rejects a creator God, whether they're turning from that to idolatry or whether they're turning from that to atheism. Because anyone who rejects a creator, Paul actually says that they're rejecting something they know is true. So in verse 19, "Since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them." So anyone who rejects a creator is rejecting what deep within themselves, innately, they know to be true. That's what Paul's actually saying. He's not saying that they haven't a clue and they've thought about it and they've come to this conclusion. He's saying deep within themselves they know that there's a creator, but they are willfully determining to reject a creator. And today that position is given a great deal of respectability, and it can shake Christians. Because most Christians, we're not profound thinkers, we're not philosophers, we're not folk who kind of sit in deep thought all day, stroking our chins and considering the mysteries of the universe. And so because of that, when we hear people with lots of letters after their name, and professors and, you know, people who are up in the academic world saying there's no God, we can feel, well, is there? And I think it's very important for Christians just to be reminded from time to time to believe in a creator. It's not weird. It's not dubious. It's not speculative. It is solid ground. And it's something that we can confidently build our lives upon, despite what the atheists see. So let's have a look at what Paul's argument is here. And it's really very straightforward. I'm going to start with verse 20. And in verse 20, he speaks about the creation of the world, and since then, God's invisible qualities have been seen. So, my starting point tonight is that God is invisible. And that's really the problem in this way of thinking with atheism, because it allows people to take refuge in something that sounds very plausible. And that's this: I only believe what I see. How many people have you heard saying that? I only believe what I can see with my own eyes. And everyone goes, well, that's a really good position to take. This is a thinking person who only believes what they can see. But of course, no thinking person only believes what they can see. I mean, a thinking person believes in love. Show that thinking person love. Where can they see it? They can see it in action, but they can't see love. It's an abstract noun. They believe they've got a brain, but they've never seen it. They may believe in Easter Island, they've never been there and had a look. And so on and so on. They believe in gravity, the force of gravity. Can't see the force of gravity. You know, all these things, it's not really a strong position to say, I only believe what I can see. And so, the fact that God's invisible, it's not a problem. Because we believe in lots of things that are invisible. What's maybe more of a problem is that what God has made is visible. Generally. So verse 20, it speaks about the creation of the world. The creation, what God has created, you can see it. It's easy to believe in the creation. I don't think I've met anyone that doesn't believe the world exists. Why is that? Well, they can see it. But the thing is, creation then, because you can see it, because you can smell it, because you can touch it, because you can move it around, because it's concrete and you can do things with it and manipulate it, it's easy to become completely absorbed in the physical stuff, in creation. It can completely absorb us so that we don't have any space in our lives for God. That kind of position, that materialist position, it's everywhere. People are absorbed with stuff. With the stuff that's visible. The stuff that they can park in their drives. The stuff that they can fill their cupboards with. The stuff that they can give to one another as presents. They're absorbed with that stuff because it's visible. And they don't give time to the invisible, because the visible absorbs them completely. But the visible stuff, says Paul, gives evidence to the invisible, to God. From the visible stuff, the creation, the invisible, God, can be clearly seen, says verse 20. Since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made. So the physical stuff that's been made by God is clearly showing God's invisible qualities. How does that work? Well, it's not a difficult argument. People often get totally confused because they go down big arguments about God and they use big words and they use abstract things, and before they know it, they're away down rabbit holes, and they're not looking at the stuff that's obvious. When Paul says that God is clearly seen from what he's made, you don't need to be smart to understand what he means. What he means is this. He says, when I go out into the world and I look around and I see its wonders, I am impressed, says Paul, at an intuitive level with this powerful fact that this is a creation. And therefore there's a creator. It's a creation and there's a creator. That's really all Paul's saying. It's so simple. I just step out my front door like I did this morning. This morning I did literally do this. I stepped out the front door and I took a few steps into the sunlight and I just stood there. Closed my eyes for a couple of minutes and listened to the birds singing and I let the warmth of the sun come on my face. And Paul says, you do that and you know intuitively you're in a creator's world. It's just telling you that at the most basic level. You're looking around at the trees and at the mountains, at the fine structures through the microscope or the great structures through the telescope. And you're saying, wow, this is the workmanship of someone. That's all that Paul is saying. It's not a complicated argument. It's the kind of argument that people have been following for most of the history of humankind. It's only a very recent phenomenon. It's not only, but it's mainly a recent phenomenon for people to account for the world in ways that don't involve a creator. And when people account for the world in ways that don't involve a creator, those accounts are not self-evident. They're not like easy to think about. You have to twist your mind around and try and figure out how the whole universe comes from nothing. Or try and think about how consciousness or order comes from nothing. How information comes from chaos. You can't easily do it. You have to really contort your brain. And it's only recently people have been doing that. For most of human history, and in many, many places still today, probably for most people even, you look out and you say, this is workmanship on a grand scale. It's the workmanship of someone. And that's why, wherever you go in the world, whether people have the revelation of God or not, whether they have the revelation, I mean, of Scripture, whether they have the revelation of Jesus or not, they worship. If they haven't got the revelation of God, they'll still worship. They'll make up something to worship because they have that deep innate sense. This is a creation. There's something greater behind the stuff that we see around us. And that is a simple argument. It doesn't need complicated words to understand. It shouldn't be difficult for us to apply it to creation because we apply it everywhere else. We look at that chair and we do not think that chair spontaneously came into existence. We do not think that chair created itself. We don't think that chair is the result of blind evolution. We look at that chair and we say, someone made that chair. And no one says, oh, wait a minute, you can't think that. That's a crazy thing to think. And yet today we're being told it's crazy to think that a far more marvellous thing than that chair, the universe, somehow is not made. It's such a straightforward argument. It looks like it's made, therefore it's made. And it's not an argument that even needs the mind. It almost bypasses the mind. It's something that's written within our very beings. That sense of being in a creator's world. It's clearly seen, says Paul. And that's why people, they worship. Even if they don't know what to worship, they know there's a creator to worship. They maybe don't know what he's like, but they still worship. Psalm 19, We'll sing at the end, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the skies the works of his hands." What is clearly seen? Verse 20 tells us a little bit more detail. "Since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen." What's clearly seen? God's power and his godness, his divine nature, and that these are eternal. I think the word eternal covers both the power and the divine nature. God's eternal power and divine nature are clearly seen. So what that means is you go out into the creation and you have a look at it and you say to yourself, well, this is a creation. Man didn't make this. Nor did anything like man make this. Nor did anything from within creation make this. Someone outside of creation made this. Power made this. Omnipotence made this. Transcendence made this. Someone who is far above us and who is ancient of days made this. We go out and we think that because it couldn't be a small creator. It couldn't be a weak creator. It couldn't be an unwise creator. It couldn't be a short-lived creator. We look at it and we think, eternal power and godness or divine nature. We see that. We see something of the nature of the glory of God in creation. God's godness, his power and his eternity are seen as we contemplate creation. We don't, again, need to be clever. We don't need long arguments. It's just straightforward as we look at the creation. Straightforward evidence of God and his eternity and his glory, his power and his divine nature. And that leaves us, says Paul, without excuse. Verse 20. "Since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse." What that means is if we act in a way that is a denial of there being a glorious God, if we deny what we know within ourselves and as we live as creatures in creation, that we deny that there's a creator, then we're without excuse. Paul goes on to speak in verse 21 onwards about people who take the route of idolatry. And that's what he's particularly speaking about. He's speaking about the Greek and Roman worlds which surround the people he's addressing this letter to in Rome. And they're without excuse, says Paul, because they are going down a road that denies the eternal power and the godness, because they're going down a road where they're still worshipping, but they're worshipping things that they're making themselves. Things that are made like created things, not like a creator. So although they knew God, verse 21, that's how clear the argument is from creation that there is a creator. It's so clear, you know it. You know God. They didn't glorify him as God or give thanks to him, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools. So they claimed to be wise. There were philosophers. There were all these philosophers in the Greek and Roman world. And philosophy was a great pastime of these people, supposedly wise, philosophy, the love of philosophy, but they became fools, says Paul. They exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. How absolutely inexcusable, says Paul, to do that. How can you do that when it's quite plain that God is a God of divine glory and majesty, transcendent and eternal? How can you do that? because verse 19 says, what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain. To then go and worship something you've made or something the local carpenter has made or the silversmith, you're inexcusable to do that. How much more inexcusable then are you to say there isn't even a God at all? Anyone who adopts an alternative account of the world to one that involves a creator, a transcendent, powerful, eternal creator, atheist included, is without excuse. Because they're sinning against light. They're sinning against an innate sense that they have that this is a creation. So why do people do it? It was such a counterintuitive thing to do. Why do people become atheists? Or why do people worship little things that they've set up in the corner of their house? Why? Well, because this whole issue is not a matter of indifference. It's not just a matter of personal choice. It's not like whether or not there is in Loch Ness a very large creature living. Whether there is a large creature living in Loch Ness or not is of no particular consequence to the destiny of mankind, to man's understanding of himself. No consequence whatsoever. But if there is a creator, then I'm living in his world. And that's an entirely different matter. It is certainly not a matter of indifference to be living in a creator's world. Because if we're living in his world, it may well be that he has something to say about the way we're living in his world. In other words, we may be accountable. And accountability is a difficult topic. Because most of us really don't want to be too accountable. We certainly don't want to face the prospect that at the end of our days we're going to be presented with the account. We don't want that. Now, if I'm an atheist, of course, then I can claim not to be concerned about that. If there's no creator, I can cheat on my partner. I can cheat on my taxes. I can write breaking every commandment in the good book on my bucket list and set about doing that. I can be thoroughly self-centered and unpleasant. I can trash the creation. And then when I'm weary of it all, I can go to a clinic and a nice clinician will stick a needle in my arm and put me peacefully to sleep. And that's the end of it. That's easy. But if there is a creator, you can't do that. And that's why many people would rather there wasn't. Because then they don't need to be accountable. And then they can live making mistakes willy-nilly. They don't even need to call them sins. And they don't need to worry about the consequences. Just so long as they don't get caught or don't fall foul of the police. And if there is in human thinking the slightest possibility of atheism being an okay and respectable thing to think, people will shut their ears to absolutely everything else and they will go after atheism with all their might. And that's what many people do. And Paul says it amounts to what he calls in verse 18, suppressing the truth. Suppressing the truth by wickedness. In other words, many people, they take all the truth about Creator God, all the truth about living in a creation, and they put it in a big box and they put the lid down and they sit on the lid and they won't let that lid open. They won't let the stuff in there out, just in case the spectre of a God to whom they're accountable rises up out of that box and disturbs their chosen lifestyle. They won't let that happen. They suppress the truth. People do that all the time because we have a vested interest. Is there anything you do just now that you shouldn't do because you've got a vested interest? One of the prominent ones just now is climate change. And those who deny climate change, you dig around and mostly you'll find they've got a vested interest in the petrochemical industry. And they want to keep burning their fossil fuels and creating the CO2 that's changing the climate, and not to have to be accountable. Now, people do that for climate change. You certainly bet they do it when it comes to the way they live in a creator's world. They have a vested interest in atheism so that they can live as they please. However, deny as we will, we can't escape. Paul says that the Creator is already making himself known in his creation, despite what people want. And he's doing it, in verse 18, by displaying his wrath. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth in their wickedness. Those who live as in a denial of the Creator are experiencing God's wrath already, says Paul. You might say, well, how? Many of the people I know, you might say, who seem to be atheists, seem to be living quite well. Well, actually, have a look at their lives. Sin is its own punishment, for a start. And the sordid consequences of sin, in the way that it degenerates the human psychology and the human life, are also consequences of God's wrath. The Creator does not let people flourish in sin. And that's what Paul says from verse 21 to the end of the chapter. It's not a pretty read, these verses. As you read them, you see people degenerating. They degenerate into idolatry. They degenerate into unnatural relationships. They degenerate into a lawless society until they are in absolute misery. And Paul is not addressing an abstract situation. He knows that the masses that live in Rome, for example, live in absolutely morally sordid and degenerate conditions. And that's the wrath of God, says Paul. That's God making them feel his anger against their choices. In other words, he unravels their lives, their society, everything, when they turn from him. And we're seeing it in our own society. I guess it's in its early stages, but it's there. Tonight, we need to use what we know about God as Creator to lead us to him. When we step out into creation and say, this is the workmanship of the Creator, we need to use it not to deny him, but to rise up and worship and to seek him. Paul tells the Athenians, God set things up the way he did so that men may seek him. And we need to use that to seek him. And we need to make sure that people around us who are actually believing the atheists, who are believing that there isn't a God, even though they haven't really a clue why they should believe that, or why they do believe that, And even though somewhere deep down there is that innate knowledge that actually it ain't so, and there is really a creator, the people around us need to be hearing us, reminding them of that. Because God is shouting at them from every blossom, from every starlit sky. He's shouting at people that he's there. And we need to tell people that he is there, and that's the reasonable thing to think, and that they should be seeking him through Jesus Christ. For some reason, as I thought about this message, I thought about atheism in this way. I thought about atheism like getting into a car and driving along down a beach at low tide, right to the water's edge. And then you switch your engine off and you fall asleep. Even though all around you is the evidence that the sea reigns and that the tide that's gone out is going to come in again. And when you wake up, hopefully you'll wake up before you've drowned. You might find it difficult to make your escape. Many people are going to wake up too late in their atheism, even though they were surrounded by the evidence that God rules. They chose not to listen and they fell asleep in their atheism. That's a terrible, terrible, sad and awful thing. And we need to sound the call to our nation. That's a foolish way to live, a dangerous way to live, and to just call people back to the obvious. This is a creation. This is a made world. There is a creator. And he wants us not to deny him and suppress the truth, but to seek him and to find him through his son, Jesus Christ, and to embrace him. And we need not be ashamed of that position, because it's the obvious one. Because God has made it plain. And it's written on every person's conscience and heart. They're living in the Creator's world. Let's not be ashamed. Let's proclaim that. And let's make sure this world doesn't escape from reality into things like atheism and leave themselves without excuse before the Creator God.